Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus. I'm C. Red Fred. As we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago, I look to my right, and lo and behold, it's the great one, the Podfather, Doug Tonis. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing pretty well. I mean, it'd be nice if the Bulls had won the last couple games, which were maybe winnable, but you can't win them all. And we're so locked into ninth that in some ways it really just doesn't matter what happens.
Speaking of nine, it's nine straight for the Celtics. I mean, I thought the Bulls played pretty well last night, you know, versus the best team in the NBA. And although they were missing, you know, Brown and Porzingis, they still have Tatum and White, which is good enough to beat teams of the Bulls caliber, especially with a Bulls team that has their own injury issues. But, you know, Stacey's always talking about that nonsense that it's a simple game. You know, usually in reference to the Bulls' occasional post score. And I'll counter that the only thing simple about basketball is one equation, and that's three is greater than two. And until this organization figures that out and addresses it with some real shooting talent and role player positions, we're going to have losses like we did last night when the Bulls shot 57% from the field and still somehow lost. What say you?
I mean, I don't think you were breaking any news to say that the Bulls could use more shooters than they have. I mean, I don't know. I guess that makes sense to me. But at the same time, against the Celtics, it's not like they shot terribly. You know, they're like 9 of 24. You know, but I guess when the other team is 21 of 48, like, that's a pretty big difference from the three-point line. But the problem maybe isn't really so much the 9 of 24. It's that you gave up 21 of 48, right? Like, I mean, that's huge volume, and it's also, you know, a shade under 44%. So, yeah, like if they shot, say, like a reasonable number, like they shot 38% and got 35 attempts up, like that wasn't going to be enough to flip the outcome of the game. I mean, the outcome of the game really was determined by the Celtics' great shooting, not the Bulls' lack of shooting. I wish we had more shooters. Like in this league, you need more shooters.
The simple game is the Celtics generated 63 points from the three-point attempts, and we generated 27. So you're not going to overcome a 36-point disparity in three-point shots unless you maybe get to the free-throw line a lot. Well, DeRozan was 4. Kobe was 4 for 4. We had 11 total attempts. You know, Vooch plays his regular 31 minutes, gets to the line all 0 times. But it wasn't like the Celtics were like, the Celtics had 17 attempts. They only outscored them by 5.
That's a lot more attempts free throw line, if you consider how many threes they put up. I mean, like the Bulls were playing inside a lot more than the Celtics. And you know, still the Celtics got up, you know, like what, 50% more attempts on like 50% less attempts inside the paint. So that's like it's a pretty stark difference. But, you know, like really, even though you point out the three-point shooting, you know, I think in the end, you know, like you still need just that dominant player. Like that's the bigger thing we need to really put ourselves on the level of the Celtics. It's that they have Jason Tatum and we don't. And it's not that Tatum had like an amazing game. He actually had like a kind of a poor game, but like from a holistic game and not a holistic standpoint, not just looking at this one game, you know, missing the Jason Tatum like player is a bigger problem than not having role-playing three-point shooters.
No doubt. But then again, there's only like 10 of those guys.
Yeah, you can't get one. I agree. You can't get one.
Where's our Hauser? Where's our Pritchard? Where's our Horford? Where's our Derek White? All these guys shooting 39% or higher. I mean, we have a few of them, but like they're not like true, pure shooters. I mean, yeah, we beat a dead horse in this. We know shooting's been a problem for years with this team. They've tried to address it by going after has-beens.
But Javon Carter and Torrey Craig seem like good additions. Like it didn't work out, but like in the offseason, you know, like Javon Carter has got a pretty good history as a shooter. Like that felt like that when, you know, like given how much money you had to spend, like you signed Carter and Craig, both were like 40% 3-point shooters at positions we needed 3-point shooting at last offseason. Like with the assets we had, we're a couple $100,000 under the luxury tax. I don't know that you could have done a lot better. Now, the problem is that Carter just fell off, you know, a cliff in a lot of ways, but he's still shooting 38%. Like, it's not like he dropped tremendously, and he's putting up 3.1 a game for his, you know, 14 minutes a game, so he's getting him up in volume when he's on the floor. So, you know, I don't know that you could have done a lot better, and Torrey Craig, you know, he's Javon Carter's looking at his field goal percentage. only 33%. No, he sucks. And Torrey Craig has actually shot the ball pretty well, but just hasn't been able to be on the floor because he's been hurt so much. So, like, I don't know in preseason that I would have said, like, oh, wow, instead of Javon Carter, you should have spent that same money on this other guy. Like, I liked the Carter signing when we made it. The only thing that bugged me a little bit about it was like, why would you sign Carter, Io, and Kobe, and you've got Caruso and Zach on the roster? It just seemed like you really needed another, like, big guy in the mix. But if they had done that, that likely would not have made shooting better. It would have probably made shooting look worse, but made the roster more balanced. So I think from solving your problem, the offseason was about as good of steps as they could have taken. You know, just Carter clearly didn't work out. Like, you know, didn't shoot the ball well. So,
Doug, the last thing we need is another power forward to push Patrick Williams. That's the last thing we need, right? I mean, come on.
You had me going there for like a split
Such
second.
A joke.
It's like, wait, what? What? Yeah. What are
you talking about? I did want to go back to your comment on the free throws, because this is a lot of news in the NBA how the officiating has changed since the All-Star break, and it's pretty clear in the numbers, but you know, some less fouls are being called. I think that's a good thing overall. I can't stand watching the NBA where, you know, the offensive player force contact and you get rewarded for that nonsense. And I think it's definitely been addressed to some degree, maybe not even enough yet, but there are less fouls being called. Do you think this helps or hurts the Chicago Bulls?
I would say it probably hurts them. And I mean, maybe it's hard to say. Like, someone like Alex Caruso probably can play better defense. But then DeMar DeRozan is maybe one of the worst foul hunters in the league in terms of, like, you know, like trying to hunt fouls. And that's like, well, that's like particularly what they're trying to crack down on, is when the offensive player makes unnatural movements to draw fouls. Now, to DeRozan's credit, I think he hunts fouls in such a way that he draws legitimate contact most of the time. Like, he's not jumping sideways into guys and stuff like that. He's faking them out, and then he's going up and he's getting them to jump into him. So, like, his foul hunting game is at a different level. Where I don't think he really relies on the refs to make weak foul calls against him to get to the free throw line as much as, like, someone like, say, you know, a prime James Harden, who'd be jumping 4 feet to the side to hit an airborne player or something. So, yeah, I mean, I'd say overall we're probably hurts us a little bit more than helps us, but I don't know that we've got guys on both ends, and that's probably true of most teams. They've got guys on both ends. There's probably only a few teams that are really so balanced or so over the top on one end of either, like, you know, maybe like the Hawks with like Trae Young as a guy, like that, maybe that hurts them a lot more. But I'd say most teams, it just changes the way they play and doesn't make a big difference.
I saw the effect of it. I think it was pretty obvious in the Houston game, however, where we saw DeMar DeRozan get ejected from that game for just an incredibly, I thought, ridiculous and stupid foul on, was it Green that he took out on that play?
So.
It was clear to me that the reason he did that, though, was his frustration with the non-call on the previous play. Did he explain it in the postgame? I don't know if he did or not, but I thought that was clearly the reason, was out of frustration. It has bothered me. It's irritated me a little bit that, you know, some of these vets that we have, and I love DeMar, but, I mean, my goodness. And I can't remember, what was the other game where they had it was against the Bucks, where they had just complete loss of composure. Like to get your thoughts on what happened there against the Rockets, and if you were as irritated by it as I was.
I don't know. I kind of thought like that was like so it was irritating, but that was like an incredibly weak ejection type call. Like, I don't know if you agree with me. Like, the only reason that he got ejected, and they ejected him for the foul. They deemed the foul a flagrant 2 and ejected him for it. But I feel very much like the only reason they ejected him for it was because of the fight that broke out. And then they said, well, because it broke out a fight, we're going to call it a flagrant 2. But, you know, whatever. Like, he goes up and bodies Green hard and Green falls to the floor. Like, I don't know. I just didn't think that was warranting of an ejection.
I thought it was absolutely warranted an ejection. I thought it was, if someone had done that to one of our players, I would have been absolutely furious. And, you know, yeah. I didn't think it was.
I guess it's like, yeah, whatever. I think, like, there's so little danger to that play, I guess, is maybe my point. Like, when guys hit people who are in the air, there's like so much danger. like to that play, and that's why I think it's like ejection worthy. Like this was physical. Yeah, maybe you're right. I mean, like I guess the counterpoint is like there's no real basketball reason to this play. Like, you know, like he just, it's not like he like football tackles him, but like he.
He ran like out to basically, you know, half court and just to knock him over.
Definitely like hits him. There's no real basketball reason for the play. And, you know, I kind of feel like maybe, anyway.
I thought Brooks' ejection was unwarranted. I didn't think he did anything other than to be, you know, I think if that was anyone besides Brooks, I don't think they would have been ejected. He was just merely sticking up for his teammate. And I don't know. I know a lot of people listening to this disagree with me because I know most of the friends I talked about it with, but it's frustrating me that the Bulls need to win these games. And in order to win, we need DeMar DeRozan.
Why do they need to win these
games? They were 3.5 games behind the Heat at that, I think, in that before that
game.
Dude,
you're not going to catch 3.5 games with the number, whether it's like 12 games left or something. I forget the exact
amount. I think they got one or two against the Heat. Am I wrong on that? Maybe I'm wrong.
You're not gonna catch anyone, dude. You're in ninth.
Yeah, we're in ninth.
There's no way we're gonna catch any of the teams ahead of us. I mean, we're like so locked in the ninth. I mean, it just is what it is. So we're ninth. That's it. There's no way in hell Atlanta can catch us. There's no way in hell we're gonna catch Philadelphia. We're gonna be ninth. We're gonna host the game against Atlanta, and then hopefully we'll win, and then we'll play loser of Philly and Miami.
I will say, though, you know, we talked about the buzzsaw portion of the schedule from Valentine's Day to, it was basically a month, from Valentine's Day to March 14th, when they played the Cavs and then they played the Clippers, you know, over the course of that. We talked about it ad nauseum about it. You remember that? And what did we say?
Yeah, it's a shame we didn't get a podcast in there because they did really well over that portion of the schedule. And, you know, we tried to talk, I think it was... maybe right after the Pacers game, I think we were scheduled to talk, and then it got canceled. Then we were going to try and talk after the Washington game, and I think it got canceled, and we're finally talking today. But yeah, they did like really well, you know, beat the Cavs, the Kings, the Jazz, the Warriors, the Pacers.
Yeah.
I mean, you lost some games in there, but like
six wins. I think
outside of that Mavericks game, like where you got annihilated, you did pretty well. You know, like even the losses weren't like, you know, like so bad, I guess. I mean, maybe the Bucks loss is pretty bad, but either way, like I think you did really well over that stretch. You know, you were talking like going 2-5, and I said I think they'll win at least 3, and they won 4. Was it?
No, they won 6. We talked about defining what would be a victory. We talked about over that course of the month how many wins would we both look at and be happy with, and we both said 5. They won 6.
Yeah, I think there are 2 points we talked about it. There was a point they had 7 games left. So I think you're probably, the first time, you're probably right. Yep. Either way, it was a great stretch over that stretch. It was a great, great stretch they had, you know, to do well. And, you know, all the mockery of competitive, they've been really competitive. You know, they've been competitive against good teams. And, yeah, like I don't think they can win a playoff round, but This is the team they said they wanted, you know, at least as a floor. You know, like I don't want to make it sound like their goal is only to be competitive, but their floor is to be competitive. They want this or better, right? Like people now say like, oh, they're happy with this. Like I really don't think Arturis Karnišovas is happy with this. As much as I like mock the person, and you'll have all these fans say like, well, they've got super low expectations. They're only trying to do this. And it's like, I mean, they're selling what they have, I think, is like one thing. You know, every person in their position wants to win the title. Like when people say stuff like they don't care, I just don't think that's true. I do think they have a floor of like, we won't be really bad. Like we don't want to tank. We don't want to take a step back to take a step forward. They want to just continually try and build forward without ever taking a step back. And they want their floor to be this.
Yeah. And I don't think it's completely insane for the following reason. If you look at how this season turned out, like Io's play lately. I mean, how incredible has he been over the course of the last month? He's been shooting some, you know, unsustainable metrics. I think he's beyond 50-40-90. I might be wrong on that, but I've got to look. But he's just playing at a very high level that I think most people never would expect. And even I, who has been a massive believer in Io, as someone who watched every game of his collegiate career, I didn't expect him to be scoring, you know, 30-plus points pretty consistently over the course of the last month. He's been awesome.
That's kind of a stretch.
It's insane.
Scoring 30 consistently.
Well, maybe not consistently, but more than once.
I think
more than once, Doug.
Yeah, more than once. I'm with you there. I'm just saying
you will admit he's been awesome, right? Yeah, you're gonna say
he's been awesome. He scored 30 points twice. In his career.
Don't minimize his greatness.
In his whole career. He's been great. He's been phenomenal. I love Io. I just don't want to overstate it. Like he's playing like Zach LaVine did to close out the year last year, where he's a 30, 50, 40, 90 guy. Like he's great, but he's not quite that great. But he has been really unbelievable.
Oh, you're right. He's not at 40 yet. So here's his stats for the month of March. 12 games. 49.4%, that's close to 50, 36.4 from three, 90 from the free throw line, and he's averaging 17.7 points. So it's a little bit less than 30, a little bit less than 30, but he has scored 34 and 35 points in the past four games. No doubt.
Incredibly. Yeah, he's playing really well. Look.
Yeah.
Even if those numbers you quoted, the 17 points a game, you know, given where you would expect him to be in the pecking order of just getting shots, right? Like, to score a lot, you need to get shots. That's a ton of points. You know, like, we'd be absolutely just beside ourselves in joy if Pat Williams had a month like that.
There'd be a parade, Doug. Can you imagine all the nauseating patience tweets we'd
have
to read?
Every time Pat has a game where he scores, like, 15, people, like go absolutely, like, bonkers. Like, oh, he's finally showing.
Yeah.
Not that we should be.
What did I tell you?
Hasn't played for a long time.
Yes, exactly. I mean, and he did have improvement this year. I'm still not sold. Anything outside of a role player. Let's not digress into the Pat Williams talk. But for this season, Io definitely deserves a pat on the back. The fact that he's shooting 39.7% from three is a massive, massive win. So he's done a really rock solid job. So why do I say this? You have Io, you have Kobe, both taking significant steps forward as basketball players, both on contracts for multiple years at relatively low dollars based on their performance. Like, that's a reason for hope. I kind of brought this up. I know you're going to laugh, but I do want to just point back 15 years almost to the day. And I had tweeted, I don't know if you read my tweet about this. Let me just pull it up here really quick. On 3/13/2009. The Chicago Bulls were 29-37, and Deng was out for the season. I remember this period really well because I was driving around Chicago in a job, and I listened to a lot of sports talk radio, and the Bulls were getting absolutely, you know, blowtorched into oblivion about how awful they were, despite the fact they had, you know, the Rookie of the Year on the roster and Derrick Rose, and Noah was a pretty significant disappointment up to that point, but there were obviously some signs, too, especially later that year. But they made that February 18th trade that delivered John Salmons and Brad Miller. And they finished 12-4 to go 41-41 and start that epic, you know, seven-game playoff series versus Boston. And so I just highlighted that because I think there are some similarities. Obviously, we don't have anybody on the roster at the same level as Derrick Rose. But we do have a number of young players who are clearly progressing, significant progressions this year. I don't think we're totally helpless. Like, I don't think this is a situation that it's impossible to see Chicago Bulls becoming a top six seed in the next 2 years. What say you?
You say that's a pretty hilarious way to try to wrap a bunch of stuff into things and then make it sound like we could be really good, but lowering the bar. So, like, we could only in our best side hit the lowest point of that bar. Like, yeah, we could be the sixth. We could be the sixth seed, but who cares? Like, who cares?
I care. Sixth seed to me is a win.
Let me put it this way. I think with the young talent we have, we could maybe get to six. But let me ask you this. I had said, and I came up with a plan that was pretty reasonable about a year and a half ago, to move Caruso, DeMar, Zach, and Vooch and get about 10 to 15 draft picks. So if you could be moving forward right now with none of those guys, and I can't remember, did I say Caruso? Caruso is in that mix too, those four guys. If you could be moving forward next year without any of those four guys, but also having like two max cap room like slots on the team and like 10 extra draft picks, probably a bunch of those were second rounders, not to make it sound like they're all first rounders, but like say, you know, like 6 to 7 first rounders and all the other stuff, and still have those, all those young guys you just said you're putting your hope on, like what would you rather be? So like, yeah, there's hope. There's always some hope. Like you're just going to have some things on your team, but they still just bungled this, like by not moving any of these assets when they had higher value. And so now like the amount of hope you would have in the situation I described, where you still have all these same young guys breaking out, but you're going to be able to bolster them with tons of cap room to bring in supporting players and tons of draft picks over the next coming due over like the next 5 years to add pieces around them consistently as they improve and to replace guys as they, you know, have signed new contracts that maybe you can't keep everyone. Like we don't have any of that now supporting infrastructure. And so, yeah, I mean, like I could see where if you make the right types of moves, you could maybe finagle your way into like 45 wins and rebuild to a 45 win team around young players. But that's not really that exciting.
Let me counter with a few things. Sure. Number one, let's look at Crusoe. Crusoe's value right now, I would argue, is higher than it's ever been at any point in his career with the Bulls because he's improved so much.
I doubt it's higher than last trade deadline. It doesn't go up when you have one offseason or one season instead of two. Crusoe being there for two playoffs would have been more useful than one. Like he has not increased his value from this past trade deadline like a month ago.
I agree, that's not what you said.
1 month ago.
But what you said.
This is since last trade deadline. Last trade deadline was a month ago.
Okay. No, I thought you were talking about trading him a year ago.
I'm clarifying. I'm clarifying. 1 month ago was the peak of his trade value.
Agreed.
Where he had already shown all the improvement this year, but now you get him for two playoffs.
Yes.
That is the peak of his trade value.
His peak, exactly, was this year. There's no doubt Zach's was last year. I think where they really just truly screwed up to me was with Vooch. Like, I've never understood, you know, I understand what they were trying to do with the trade. He clearly declined. Now they signed him for another 3 years, which is pure insanity.
Dude, did you just say you never understood what they were trying to do with the trade?
I just corrected it. I immediately corrected it.
For a full year, you told me you loved this trade and fought with me about it.
Did you hear what I said immediately after that sentence? I said, I understood what they were trying to do. They were trying to bring in a stretch five who's now become a constrict five. And he's terrible, and yes, and you'll counter, well, look at his career. Yes, I understand that. When they acquired him, he was shooting on high volume. We've gone down that road a billion times.
It was
times.
Too much, yeah. Without getting down, Vooch, it was regardless of how it turned out, it was too much to pay
Dude,
for.
Dude, even you could not have predicted or expected him, be honest, to shoot like this, to shoot sub 30.
No, but if he shot 35%, it was still too much to pay.
I agree. Fair.
Vooch shooting 35% is still too much. It was a terrible trade no matter what.
Absolutely agree.
An absolute disaster. There was a bad idea no matter what that turned into an even worse idea because Vooch played even worse than you could have expected.
Absolutely agree.
So I agree. Like if you had a range of possibilities, like, and I always view things as a range of possibilities, mm-hmm. This was really the worst case outcome.
It is.
Like this was the worst case outcome.
And they've put more manure on it by signing him to a 3-year deal. That is just the more shocking thing. I would have been fine with two. The fact that you have that albatross, he has declined. He's like a human glacier now. Like just even looking at last night's game, the Bulls were up. I'm talking on the defensive end. Not even talking about his shortcomings on shooting the basketball. Bulls were up 6-4. The Celtics had the ball. Everyone, I encourage you to go back to this play. You can even watch the highlights on it because they'll show it. Tatum got a switch from Caruso to Io, who's still a good defender. Tatum drives. And like I said, I'm not going to pound a dead horse, but Vooch is as close to a dead horse as there can be, who's still breathing. He's so bad and so slow in terms of help and rim protection, it's a freaking joke. And if I go one more year of watching the Chicago Bulls and the screaming need for a rim protector and they do nothing about it, I'm going to freaking lose my mind. Like, Caruso has provided some of the best perimeter defense I've seen in the past few years, and yet we're like one well-set pick away from a basic layup because of the human glacier. So the same thing happened last night, like in the fourth quarter. I think it was like 115. It was right around 115, 107. They were down by 6, I think. I took a note on that. Again, same play happens, except this time with Caruso. some of the weakest rim protection you'll ever see. Got to address this. Now, we still got him for two more years. You know how bad he's going to look? You know how bad Horford embarrassed him yesterday? Horford's like 5 years older. He's so much more athletic. Horford had like 23 points. I don't know if you remember that one when it was 79-79. Fakes him up, blows by him, lays it up. I mean, like, dude, his defense is so freaking bad. It is a major issue that you cannot wait 2 years. You have to address this offseason. I don't know how.
Can I interrupt for a second?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Do you want to address shot blocking or shooting? Like,
how about both?
One of the problems you're talking about is like they just don't have assets. Like, I don't even know if they keep Pat Williams and DeMar DeRozan. Like, I don't know that they will be able to sign a single player above the vet minimum to add to this team. So, I mean, like, and I don't even know that they'll be able to keep both those guys and stay under the tax. Like, so part of the thing I was been saying for a long time is you're going to run into this point where it's like, it's just very expensive to keep everyone. And even when you keep everyone, you're not very good. Like, you're kind of average. So what are you doing here? And this is why you had to get out of all these deals, like, in the past and not extend, you know, Vooch to this huge deal. So it's just going to be really hard to build on this. So I think there's like reason for hope, like you said, with like Io and in Kobe. But here's the thing that's going to be a bummer is we're going to like re-sign DeMar and Pat, and we're just going to kind of kick the continuity can down the road for a couple more years. And then all of a sudden you're going to be in a boat where like Io and Kobe, if they continue being really good, are going to be unrestricted free agents at like 25. Which is like really rare to be as good as they are and then be unrestricted, because usually guys at that like level of play are going to have signed 5-year deals. And so they're going to be like young in their prime guys who are unrestricted. They're going to get massively overpaid. Like, and so now if you keep them, you're going to have to pay probably, if they continue doing what they're doing, like near max money for both of them. And then that's going to be way too much money, and you're not going to be able to build anything around them either, like however much you like them. So it's really going to be this thing where it's like, while you have this advantage now, it's going to go away, and it's going to become a detriment to you later when these guys have to pick up new deals, unless you can capitalize on it immediately. And we can't, and we're not going to, because we didn't set the stage to do the stuff I mentioned a couple years ago, because there's no plan outside of the next 6 months. And because of that, it's really hard to figure things out. Like in the NBA, you have to align like a lot of windows of stuff together. You need your young talent to come together at the same time. You need enough cheap contracts balanced with your expensive contracts. You need, you know, people to replace those guys as those expensive contracts become too expensive to keep for your non-superstars, and you got to move on. So you need like a pipeline of new talent from the draft, and like you need like all these things kind of going, you know, to keep success going. And the Bulls don't really have any of it because they don't look at it that way. They don't look at like, how do I build a sustainable product? They only look at the next 6 months, and it's going to be really hard for them. So like some of the predictions I told you about what's going to happen, like the salary crunch when they have to extend all these guys and they're not going to get like past this point, like all those I thought were like pretty obvious things to speculate about. But the next obvious thing, if you want to look a couple years in the future, is these guys are going to be free agents, and if they pan out, you're not going to be able to afford to keep them, or if you do, you're going to be locked in to like a 30-ish win team again, you know, mid-30s, upper-30s, because they're now going to be too expensive.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason, though, why I think that third year on Vooch, that third year is the year when these two guys are going to be making a combined $21 million. That's the year where you needed to try to somehow make a trade, find someone that you could bring in who's a difference maker. And instead, now you have this walking albatross of a $21 million contract in that year that's going to screw up something. It's going to prevent you from doing something. And that mistake, like everything else, I you can kind of quasi-justify, Doug. I do. Like even DeMar DeRozan, like if the Bulls, so let's go, this is a good segue into my next question. You know, DeMar's having another good year. He's having a solid year, and I pointed out last week in one of my great polls, I don't know if you saw this one, but he's averaging 23.3 points, 4.3 rebounds, 5.3 assists. He makes $28.6 million this season. He's an unrestricted free agent in the offseason. Do you want him to return, and what is the most you would offer? Did you see this poll?
I did not
see. Okay, so here are the options I had, and I want you to guess what the fan said. 3 years, 28 to 35 per year. And this is shortly after I put up this poll, Casey came out with basically backing these numbers. 2 years, 30 to 40 per year. 3 years, 27 per year or less. And then the fourth fourth option is let him walk.
I would pick option number three.
Three years, 27 per year or less?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think he would accept that? Because Casey says no.
I don't think he'll get more than that on the open market.
Hmm. Even from Philly?
And I don't think he'll get more than that on the open market. And if he does, let him walk. I mean, to your point, DeMar DeRozan is going to be Vucevic in 2-3 years.
I think he'll age better than that.
Like, you think he'll be better than that?
Yeah, absolutely. He's not going to be Vucevic. Vucevic is going to be a complete disaster in year three. I think there's still going to be value from DeMar DeRozan as a sixth man in his third year.
He'll be 37 that year.
Yeah, but athletically, he's not fallen off like Vuce has. You know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, DeMar was an elite athlete when he was like a young player. Like he was.
Yes.
He was among the better athletes in the NBA. So his athleticism is definitely not in decline. But, man, I think he's going to be as bad as Vuce is when he's 37.
I disagree now. But that said, yeah.
It might be less important if you think about it in some ways. Like, he's not – like, Vuce, one of the problems with his athletic decline and his lack of defense is he's playing the most important defensive position on the floor. You know, a lot of teams are hiding a guard or a wing defensively. It's like a little easier to do that usually. But I think also his offensive game, I think, is going to get less and less. Like, people always say his game doesn't rely on athleticism, so it's not going to matter if he loses a step. I think as he loses a step, his craft is going to be a lot worse. And then he can't shoot threes, so he can't space the floor. And if his efficiency at that two-point shot drops, like, doesn't have to drop all that much before all of a sudden, like, offensively, he's really not doing anything for you. Except hogging possessions. And he's such a ball pounder. Like, maybe a good example would be like old I'm blowing the guy's name. The guy was in Phoenix, Johnson, who went
Cam to Johnson?
On the trade.
Cam Johnson?
No, this was a long time ago. And he's like this older player, Joe Johnson.
Oh, Johnson, so. Yeah.
Yeah, like Celtics. Like he became known as ISO Joe at the end of his career. And... just shoot these mid-range shots.
DeMar's already known as that.
He's gonna look like Joe Johnson at the end of his career, and like it's just not that great. Like I would be okay bringing him back for a couple years because it's really just like you've got almost nothing else you could do. You know, the aggressive thing you could do if you wanted to start, if you're willing to take a step back for the future. And you want to start trying to align yourself into building real assets, the move you would have to make, and I don't think the Bulls would do it, and I don't know that I would do it necessarily easier either, but the move you would have to make is you'd have to trade Kobe White and Ayo Dosunmu this offseason. Those are the guys who can bring back real valuable assets.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Because
they won't even.
Yeah, I know it's not going to happen. And Alex Caruso. Those are the three guys you could trade. So if you wanted to try and do like some kind of bridge thing, the thing you'd actually do is you'd trade those three guys and then you'd keep the mid three around to try and keep you afloat for a couple years. And then when all the assets that come due from those other three guys, like you would then have that to rebuild with later. Like that would be your way to try to maybe sort of mediocre and then like build assets. And look, I hate it. Like I'm literally saying trade the only guys in the team you like watching. So like, I get it. I get why you wouldn't want to do that, but that would be the only way you're going to get real assets. Like you're going to have to pay to get rid of Vooch and you might have to pay to get rid of Zach at this point. And you know, DeMar is a free agent. So you're either going to probably overpay if you keep him and then not be able to trade him, or you're going to let him walk for nothing. So it's not like a really great situation, you know, for the Bulls. They just keep, with the 6 month ahead philosophy, keep digging themselves into this bigger hole. You know, so it's just going to be tough for them. And they don't got any Gar Pax guys to bail them out anymore.
The
Gar Pax trade is done. Now they're going to be counting on Julian Phillips and Dalen Terry to be there, like the guys they drafted.
Yeah, good luck with
next
that.
Pieces. And yeah. So, like, and whatever. I like Julian Phillips. That was a great second round pick, and I think he's played okay when I watched him play for his age and his draft position. But like, I can't say I got, like, you never have a lot of talent or a lot of faith in second rounders until they prove it. But I don't have like a lot of faith in their own draft picks, like stepping forward and really adding to this team. Like, historically, they've not had a lot of chances yet because they keep trading their draft picks away. But it's just going to be rough. Like, I think they're just going to be this team that's a little bit worse every year. Like, next year is going to be a little bit worse than this year, when this year is probably going to end up like a teeny bit worse than last year. You know, are about the same, and
they might not have a choice in this matter with DeMar. And here's why: these Sixers are collapsing right now. I'm not even sure if Embiid's going to come back at the age of 30 this year for the playoffs. They're going to be a massive disappointment in the playoffs, no matter what. Even if he does come back, and next year they have one guy under contract, or two guys: Paul Reed, I think, and Embiid. Tobias Harris and his $39 million are coming off the books at age 31. Every other player they have is coming off the books. They're going to have a boatload of cap space, and I can absolutely see the Sixers saying, you know what, we'll pay DeMar DeRozan $40 million for 2 years, $45 million for 2 years. For 2 years? When you're kind of tying that to Joel Embiid?
I don't think they want DeRozan.
Well, we'll see. Maybe you're right. But what other options are out there?
What do they need? A mid-range ISO player who can't play defense? How does that help them?
The Sixers have always struggled.
They're lacking, like,
in the playoffs. They've always struggled in the half court.
And DeMar's not been a good playoff performer.
But he's a good half court.
Historically, gone away in the playoffs
because he's had, you know, not great teams around him in the playoffs. I mean, the Raptors had issues with, you know, Kyle Lowry at that time was not exactly a clutch player in the playoffs either. You know, guess what? He'll have a lot less attention on him when Joel Embiid's standing on the floor. Like,
yeah,
maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. They'll look at him.
I get your case.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get your case. It could happen. I haven't looked robustly at to see, like, overall who is available, but I don't think they're going to be gunning down that path. Like, there was talks at the deadline. I think they could have had DeMar if they wanted him, like, and they didn't. Like, I don't know what would have changed now that they would have said, like, hey, with our healthy version of our team, like, there's no room. There are rumors the Bulls are willing to shop DeMar at the deadline, and, like, Philly didn't want him.
Yes, because they're a smart organization, and an injured Joel Embiid, why would you trade assets for DeMar DeRozan when you could just get him for free?
Well, at the time all this came out, Embiid wasn't injured yet.
I don't know about that. I got to look that up, Doug.
Well, I mean, like, he was out. Go back, say, like, a month before the trade deadline. I'm not saying, like there's all this talk about who they wanted, and it was like Philly didn't, and they explicitly said they did not want DeMar DeRozan or Zach LaVine. They wanted a wing 3-and-D player. They felt they needed someone who could defend, and they needed someone who could shoot. Mm-hmm. Like, just, like, looking at needs. Like, I don't think they're going to go back into the offseason and say, you know what we're missing is volume mid-range scoring. Like, I just don't, and I don't know that DeMar is going to offer anything else. He's like, I don't know that DeMar is a good player if he's your third option on offense. Like, I don't think that fits his role at all because he doesn't space the floor. He's not going to open things up for Embiid. He's not going to open things up for Maxey.
Yeah, you're right.
And he's not going to defend. Like, I just don't see them looking at that type of player and saying, this is what I want. Like, I think a team that brings in DeMar is going to need him to be a secondary scorer, not like a third or fourth scorer next to their stars, because those guys need to shoot threes.
Well, we'll see what happens. I think the Sixers are pretty smart. I think they're going to probably go after Okoro and steal him away. I think they're going to go after – I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they won't have an interest in DeMar, but DeMar's going to be one of the best players out there as an unrestricted free agent this offseason, and they have just a boatload of space, and the Bulls are not going to pay – you know, I think you could throw 35 to 40.
Interesting.
For him.
Yeah, best is an interesting way to look at it. You know, because it's like you start looking at what a player's role is and what he's going to do for you. And DeMar is like maybe the best, like, number one type option available. Right? Like, if you needed a number one scoring option for your team, DeMar is going to be the best guy available. Like, you can have him put up over 20 something points a game, he'll give you good efficiency. You know, he can run kind of a lot of stuff through them. But if DeMar's role is like third scorer, like, I don't know that he's very good in that role at all.
I don't think he'd be bad in the role with the Sixers. He'd be the second scorer. And I can also see Embiid.
The third score. Embiid and Maxey are going to be the two guys who handle the ball. They're not going to start giving DeMar the ball.
Maxey's got to be under contract. Why does it say here? Oh, they got to sign him to a big contract. You're right. So
they extended Maxey.
They extended him. This is my bad. So Maxey's also under contract. But that said, those are the only two guys. They're still going to have over like $100 million. Good point. I forgot about Maxey.
Yeah. They'll have room to get DeMar. I'm not saying they won't. I'm just saying, like, I just don't. If you start thinking about DeMar as a third option, I don't know that he's really that great a third option because he doesn't shoot threes and he doesn't really defend. And, you know, all of his ISO scoring and volume scoring becomes a lot less valuable in that scenario. Like, you don't need that. You're not going to pound the ball through that. Like, it's just like if you could get someone who could shoot 8 threes a game and play good defense and does really not a whole lot else, that's probably a better option than DeMar for you.
Do you think he's going to be back next year?
I think he'll be back. I don't think the Bulls have any other plan. Like, they don't, they either basically have to willingly take a step back, but like, it's not like they can reallocate his money in the short term to do anything. So I think based on everything our front office does, I'd be shocked if he's not back.
Yeah. Last topic before we bring the bus in, Dalen Terry. You mentioned him briefly, and Dalen Terry has not been terrible lately. He's been very good for them, especially last night. I don't say very good. He was very good last night. He's been better in recently. What say you about Dalen? Are you starting to change your tune on him? Do you feel like he's actually going to be potentially grow into a role player for the Chicago Bulls?
I guess I would say, like, at one point, I don't know if I would have said Dalen Terry belongs in the NBA. I would have said probably not. Like, I was kind of on the why'd you even pick up his option, last year. And I'll say, recently he's shot the three-point shot better, which is a plus. I think in his last, or not three-point shot, it's been shooting better from the field.
Absolutely.
It's a plus.
50% in the month of March from the field.
His defense has definitely been a little bit more under control. Like, he has more of an impact when he goes in there and defends. Like, he used to be, I think, like, flying around and didn't know what he's doing. And now I think you see moments where you're like, wow, he could be a really good defender, like a really good defender in the league, maybe a little like Caruso-esque. But he just needs to get a lot smarter on that end. But like, I see flashes where I'm like, all right, yeah, he's got the level of aggression of Caruso. Can he ever get like the control and smarts to go with it? So I like that when I see those flashes. So yeah, I don't know. But like, if I said, is this like wholly different from Javonte Green or Shaq Harrison or one of these guys? Like, I'm not sure that the answer is yes there. Like, I don't know. So I think maybe he can be a hustle energy guy. But he just still needs to go a long way. And, it's fine. It's fine if he's on the roster.
I agree. We all agree. He's playing better. We all hope he's not a complete bust, as his career so far up until, recently indicated. When you still figure in last night's rock-solid game with the stats, 50% for the month of March is very good. He's 25% from three, which is still terrible, and 40% from the free-throw line for this month. So, like, until that gets fixed, you just can't be that type of role player and not be able to, and shoot the ball that bad to get any to be considered as a legit piece in a good rotation on a playoff team. You just can't. You can't get any worse. He's getting better. It's clearly, improving. But I don't know. I wouldn't count on Dalen Terry to have moving.
The swing skill for him has always been shooting, and that was true when we drafted him. It was like, can he learn to shoot?
Yeah.
Because if he could learn to shoot, you could see him as like a poor man's Lonzo Ball. Because he actually has like really good passing instincts as well.
I agree.
Though it doesn't always get to put him on display. And like maybe not like wouldn't have the full point guard ability of Lonzo Ball. But like if he could shoot, he would be have really nice upside, right? Because beyond being able to be an open shooter and being a solid defender, he'd be a guy who could be a great connective piece. Like if the shot's not there, he could move the ball really well to someone else. So, if you squint real hard, you can see where they're going there. That said, like he needs to like, and I'm not like paid that close attention to his form lately. So this is old. Like, this is an old statement. Maybe it's changed a little bit. I don't know how much he's working with Patton on his shooting, but he just needed to really overwork his form. Like, his shooting form is very poor and inconsistent. And it's going to be really hard for him without reworking that shot completely to turn that around. And I've not paid a lot of attention to his shot mechanics in the last, whatever, month or 2 months to see if it's, like, really changed from preseason when I was watching him more closely on that. But that would be the thing that really needs to change for him to make an impact. And, you know, the Bulls have had a lot of improvement for their shooters this year. A lot of people giving Patton a lot of credit for that.
A lot of decline from Vooch.
Yeah, but I mean, come on.
A lot of decline from our recent acquisitions as free agents. Carter. I agree. Yeah, they've gotten better. I'm thrilled about it. But yeah, I don't know. I think it pretty much starts if you give 99% of the credit, you got to give it to the player. But that's definitely helpful. Tip of the cap to the coach, but it's the effort and the work that the player puts in. So that's where I always tend to give more.
I think for the young players, the coach helps more.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, if you're Vooch and you're like, what was it, 33 now, 32? Like, you're probably not reworking your whole shot at 32.
No.
When you're Io or Kobe and you're 22 and a coach comes in and says, hey, let's work on these few adjustments for your shot, you're probably more likely to try and work those things in. So, like, for the guys who've improved and they've both given him credit, like, I can see that. I think you're going to see a lot less changes, you know, with older guys. Like, older guys, their shot kind of is what their shot is. It's like you've got so much muscle memory. It's even by the time you're 25, 26, 27, I think it's probably really hard to rework your shot if you've been using it for a long time.
I will say the Bulls have a, you know, obviously a number one pick in 2024. There are some players in this draft starting with Terrence Shannon, who's freaking unbelievable for the beloved Illini. I talked about Io before. I'm talking about Terrence Shannon now. I think he's going to be an excellent NBA player. As far as defensively, the guy, a two-way player. I don't know if he's – I have no idea where people are predicting Terrence Shannon to go in the draft, but if he's anywhere near the Bulls in the middle of the draft, you have to get him because he is just a phenomenal two-way player. And I think he's already significantly better than Dalen Terry. So, I mean, there's going to be role players available in this draft that will be really good. This is a huge summer for Dalen Terry. He better get that shot fixed because if he doesn't, I don't think he's going to be anywhere near the rotation, maybe not even on an NBA roster if he keeps on going like this. He can't shoot 25% or below. Enough said on that as we bring in the bus. Last comment from you on the return of Javonte Green. What say you?
I'm excited for all five Javantes to be back. You know, like I don't know. Like I don't think it's going to make a big difference. But I mean, I just like whatever. No 10-day contract was going to make a big difference, and I liked Javonte Green. I know you weren't always a huge fan of Javonte Green. And maybe I should say, because whenever I called you a Javonte Green hater, you were really upset about it. You just didn't like Javonte Green's playing as many minutes as he played. And I think we both liked Derek Jones Jr. And feel he should have gotten some more of those minutes.
That's correct.
I do think like Javonte is a depth piece, given all of our injuries, to throw out there for a few minutes, I think is fine. Like, you know, there's no expectations for a guy who just signed a 10-day deal.
Exactly. We have so many injuries. To bring him back is fine. He knows the system. You know, I always said he's a, you know, five skills in a three body playing the four. You know, that's essentially my point about Javonte is, and everything was incredibly dependent on his great athleticism and his hard, you know, how hard he played. And that's to be admired. I didn't think he was an exceptionally smart defender at all. And I highlighted that many, many times, but people loved his dunking, loved his general high energy play. You know, he's just not a great shooter either. You know, so I mean, whatever. I understand why people like him. I'm not a fan.
Javonte Green,
but I'm
34.2% career from three.
Yes, which is not good considering that every one of his shots he's taken in his career has been like wide open with no one within 8 feet of him. I mean, he's nobody got.
You know, there's another guy who has also only taken wide open threes, whose career is 34%. That people tend to think is a really good shooter.
And who's that?
Nikola Vucevic.
Oh, really? I thought you were going to say something else. I'm glad I didn't.
No, he's got a worse career shooting percentage.
Is that true? He's down to that low.
That is true.
Oh my God.
Worse than Green for his career. Also, we've posted numbers like he's almost exclusively wide open shots. No one within 6 feet of him. It's like 90. It was 90% this year, but for his career, he's like one of the top wide open shot shooters.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I had no idea.
Maybe. He's a worse shooter than Javonte Green. So next time you bring up Javonte Green can't shoot, just remember the guy you keep saying has to shoot threes also can't shoot.
Okay. Maybe we can play Javonte at center and just have Vooch sit down then.
I think we'd do better, to be honest. I
mean, maybe you're right. Maybe
I don't know what Javonte's been up to. Like, he's not played in a game.
No, he hasn't been in good enough to
this
play
this season.
Yeah, exactly. NBA.
So, like, you know, I think it's questionable. Like, I don't know. What he's got going on, because he was hurt, right? I thought he had some injury, and then
I would have preferred if the Bulls brought Taj back, to be honest, but it's all right. I mean, it was too late because I think Tibbs scooped him up. Am I right, or is Taj in the league now, or maybe I'm wrong? I don't know. Maybe he's off at roster.
I can't remember, to be honest. I know there was like thoughts when he got waived that Thibodeau was gonna bring him back at some point for. But I don't know if that actually happened. I can't say I've been following Taj Gibson, to be honest. You know, but I think for sure Thibodeau would, if there was anything left at all in Taj Gibson's tank, that Tom Thibodeau was going to be the one who brings it back. So a quick Google search. It looks like he got signed by the Detroit Pistons.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, darn it. I wish we would have got him. But regardless, big picture. As we bring the bus in, I'm going to throw my prophet robes on. I'm going to destroy the Wizards on Monday night. I predict it. And Denny Average, if he's healthy, I'm not sure if he's playing or not. Really looking forward to seeing him come to town and watching the Bulls win. What say you? Do you agree with me?
You're excited to beat up the Washington Wizards and then somehow take some type of great draft credit. Denny Advias on that team.
Greatness awaits. Greatness awaits. All right, brother.
Greatness awaits. Sure.
Go Bulls, my friend. Go Bulls.
All right, go Bulls.
Take it easy, bud.